I have someone to thank for before I begin, and it's Dr. North. I want to thank you for the invitation. He's been a good friend of mine for a long time. And without him, I wouldn't be standing here. I often go to his office and tell him lots of stories. And that's probably why I'm standing up here, because I get to tell stories. And that's what I'm going to do today. I'm going to leave my card up here. I'm thinking it's going to go two ways. Either you're going to burn them before I leave, or they are going to disappear, and don't wait to come and get them because I only have a few up here. And if you're like the man at the pool of Bethesda and you wait till somebody pushes you in, you won't get one. So, but I am going to be bold right now because I work for hospice and I see people die every week. So Simone, I'm going to talk to you. I have a man, he's a Korean. Not Korean, he was in the Korean War. He's about almost 70 years old. He's going to be dying probably in the next couple of months. He has no rest whatsoever, no peace. He doesn't really know God. He knows of him since his youth. And he's very distraught. He can't sleep at all. So when I go to see him constantly, we talk about the peace of God and the strength of God. And we talk about salvation. So when you sang these two songs, 620 and the other one, I think they would do him very good. So if you would like to go with me to this man's house, he's committed many atrocities. He's killed women, he's killed children, he's killed a lot of people he has a lot of remorse for. When he came back from the Korean War, he had his family. But they couldn't fix him. Psychology couldn't fix him. You know, there's no institutions for these people who come back from the Korean War, you know, or World War II. I see a lot of these people who don't get the counseling that some of our people who are coming back today get the counseling. So he got into drugs, sold a lot of cocaine, heroin, smoked a lot of pot, did a lot of things, and he's remorseful, but he doesn't know how to get peace. I've met with him twice. He just got out of jail about 9 months ago, and now he's dying. So these are the people I get to deal with. These are the people that you see on the cross at the end of their life. These are the 11th hour people. So I want you to see me at the end of the service, if you would, because your voice is beautiful, and I think that would richly bless him. One of the things I don't think that we understand until we get in the field, at least I didn't, especially in this field, is that you have to discard some of the things that you've been taught and that you believe in the things that you normally live your everyday life. You know what I mean? I don't think it would be too good for me to go in there and ask him to give up cheese right at the present time, or meat, or, you know, dress accordingly. So some of those things you kind of got to put on the back burner. You also have to recognize, how safe are you? Seriously. How safe are you? How real are you? And how big is your God? Okay? Because the truth is, we don't meet the prostitutes in here. We don't meet the drug addicts in here. We don't meet the alcoholics in here. We probably don't meet too many broken people in here. But yet we're broken. Sorry, we're broken. I've been married 24 years. I got married when I was 18. And the first 8 was hell. I'm sorry, it's serious. Serious people. So I wish those seminarians the best. And I've been called since I've been 16. I gave my first sermon in the Adventist church when I was 16. So gave my heart to the Lord. I've been through hell myself. But what I'm up here to do is I'm up here to tell you some stories about feeling about my God picture and how it's changed and how it's formulated and how it's, when I lay my head on my pillow at night, that I have peace, no matter what the day's journey has begun and no matter what the end is. God still loves me, and you will never convince me that he doesn't, no matter how sinful I am. Dead serious, people, on that. You will not convince me otherwise, because it takes belief to believe that. You know, when you're dragged to Jesus' feet after just committing adultery, it takes belief that God loves you, even when the world's against you. So why are you here? Seriously, why are you here? Are you here to get a degree? Or are you really here to love the lost? Because if you're not here, if that's not your goal, to love the lost, the degree doesn't really mean anything. That's the truth. So all the stuff we learn, I hope you couch it in the context of loving the lost. Let me just tell you a little bit about my day yesterday, and then I'm going to get into some miracles. I met Karen yesterday, who's a former Adventist, who's thinking about having an affair on her wife, on her husband this week. I met Harold, who I ministered to his wife 5 years ago, who had passed away, and he'll be dying probably this week. I haven't seen him in 5 years. I was called out at 10 o'clock, 10:30 last night. He's not even on my hospice, and man, was I tired. The last thing I wanted to do was go out at 10:30 last night, and I got home at 8, got done working. I did not want to go out and see Harold. As much as I loved him, I did not want to go. I went anyway. And this is what I mean about being real. You ever get sick of people? They're leeches. They suck the life right out of you. They ask and they ask and they ask, and you keep giving and you keep giving and you keep giving. And then you get tired of even your own spouse. You get tired of your kids. You get tired of your teachers. You get tired of the student looking, sitting next to you saying, "Hey man, you got those test questions? Did you finish yours?" You don't know my day, man. You don't know what I've been through. The man at the pool of Bethesda, "Do you really want to be made well?" "Not really. Would you do my work for me? Would you push me in the pool because I can't get there?" And you get sick of people. You get tired of people. You get tired of life. You get tired of the financial aid department pressing down your back for the money and the rent. You get tired of all those things. And then you go to work and you meet dying people and you don't even care to pray for them. That's right. That's honesty. You throw up a prayer and you hope it did some good and you walk out of the room. I'm being serious, people. You get burnt. God looks for honesty, not for Pharisees. Pharisees put on the good face and say, "Oh no, I don't feel like that, Lord. No, I love that person over there." Really? Really? You do? And here's the truth. I got so burnt for 3 months that I would just pass on by and pray at the door and write a note of people in facilities. I would avoid people in the facilities that wanted extra ministry because I got sick of them. I couldn't give anymore. Until one day, I was just saying to God, "I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I don't know what you want from me, what more you want from me. I'm overwhelmed with my bills. My kids, my wife, everybody wants from me. I have nothing left to give. And God says, well, why don't you just look in your own heart and stop feeling the need to be liked by everybody? Did you ever notice that we have this great need to be liked by everybody? That we want everybody to think we're good people? Now, there goes a good guy. There goes a great guy. There goes a nice guy. He'll go the extra mile for you. And little do you know, he's going that extra mile and he's calling you every name while he's getting there. Yeah. Don't come back. Until one day I was walking down the hallway and I was saying, God, I don't know where you are. I'm tired, I'm burnt, I don't know where you are. And this little old lady's wheeling down the hallway in her wheelchair. I never usually avoid old people. For 3 months I did on this one. She's wheeling down this nice long hallway. And I'm walking towards her and I'm walking as close to the wall as possible. And she's on the other side. And all of a sudden, she takes her wheeler and she's kind of wheelchair and she's wheeling right at me. And I head to the other side and she heads to the other side. And we're doing this back and forth. And I'm like, man. All right, it's kind of like one of those heat-seeking missiles. So she came up to me and she's crying. And I looked at her. Tears rolling down her face. And I said, honey, what's the matter? And she said, sir, she grabbed my hand. She looked up into my face and she said, sir, would you get me a cup of cold water? You ever read that verse? An arrow was shot from heaven right to me. And God said, I don't care how bitter you are. You're right, Scott. You're an evil person. You're a bad man. But any works done are done in my name, no matter how much they're tainted with your evilness. They're good and righteous in my name. That blew my mind because I just think I'm righteous anyway, right? I think I'm good anyway when I'm doing good. And not knowing that I'm really still evil. So even if we do them, it doesn't matter. God looks at us being covered by God's blood and his Son, and we still do those works, and sometimes the works are for us. They're for us, not for anybody else. I had like several stories to tell you, but I don't know which one to choose from. Because I've had so many miracles done, and I journal these stories. You see, I see God's stories in the Bible told over and over and over again in the lives of believers. They just don't see it that way. So I'll tell you this one. Oh, by the way, you guys are all ambassadors, just to let you know that. So the biggest thing as an ambassador is whatever you bind here on earth is bound in heaven. And I hope you believe that. You better believe that because you're sitting in the wrong place if you don't. Because somebody's going to have to rely on your faith to get to God. Somebody's going to have to believe that you actually have the power to tell them they're forgiven of their sins and believe it. They've got to believe you. If they believe you, they believe God. That's the truth. Go read it. It's right in the scriptures. So, I'll tell you this story. How long do I have? A half hour? Cool. Okay.
About what? 10:20?
Okay. I was called to Lakeland Hospital about a month ago. And I usually don't get called to the hospital because all my patients are in facilities. They're in facilities or they're at homes. Well, I got a call from two of my nurses, and my supervisor said, Scott, you got to come immediately to the hospital. We have a patient up here. He's going to be passing away real quickly. And his son is here, and he is in a spiritual crisis. And I said, okay. So I go to the hospital, and all of a sudden, as I walk in, all the staff walks out. I'm like, whoa, cool. It's just me. So I walk in, and I'm looking for what faith this man is of. And he's got this St. Joe County Jail jacket on. And he's about, oh, probably my age. I'm 43. He's probably about 45, 46. And I walk in, and he's turns around, and he's crying. He's bawling. And so I sat down, and I said, I'm going to just name the name, Steve. I said, Steve, what's the matter? And he said, my dad's dying. And I said, yeah, I know your dad's dying. I said, but I don't think that's the problem. And he goes, yeah, it's not. I said, what's the matter? He said, he's a bad man. I said, really? I said, is he any worse than you? I'm bold, sorry. And he looks at me and he goes, I think so. And I said, well, tell me what he did. Let's talk about his life. So he started talking about his life. He's had 6, 7, 8 women he's been through. He's got a couple of different kids by some of the other women. Drug addict, done a lot of cocaine, done a lot of pot, abandoned his kids, hardly worked. Just really rude and crude. And I looked at him, you know, I'm assuming he's from St. Joe. And I said, so if your dad treated you so bad and abandoned you and abused you and neglected you, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, I just flew in from California last night. I said, you're from California? Where's that jacket come from? He goes, that's my mom's. I said, oh. I said, so you came from California? And he goes, yeah, I did. I said, you came from California for... And he goes, to tell my dad. I said, tell him what? He said, to tell him that I forgive him. I said, you came from California to tell your dad that you forgive him. Yeah, and I said, okay, and I said, and God what? God can't forgive him? And he goes, well, I'm not sure. I said, well, wait a minute, I'm not understanding this. I said, you flew from California to come and tell your dad you forgive him. But God sent his son in this world to not forgive him? I said, I don't care what your dad does or what he's done. You go in that room and you tell him again. But this time, because I said, lift your hands up. And he lifted his hands up. I said, you see those hands? And he said, yes. I said, those are God's hands. I said, so when you forgive him, you tell him God forgives him. You tell him that God flew across the United States while he still had breath in him to tell him that he is his son. That's his son laying in that bed. And don't you view it any other differently. And that's what he did. And his father, he said, he came back and he said to me, I said, what did he say? He said, he didn't say anything. He just looked at me. And he kind of rolled his head a little as to roll it away. I said, well, what did you expect him to do? He said, I don't know. I said, well, when you're full of shame and guilt, all you really can do is look at the feet of Jesus. You can't even raise your head. Never mind, respond. That's the truth, people. You see, we go to church every day. We come here every day. These are the things we do every day. We are dressed nicely. We all look clean. that says a lot to us psychologically. It says a lot to the world out there. It's a very dirty, filthy, sick, adulterated, broken world out there. And what I'm asking you is just a little bit. Just a little bit when somebody's life is messed up. Give them the grace of God. Give them the second chance. Give them the third chance and the fourth chance. Don't expect people to jump out and be clean all at once, because we're not. I have many, many, many more stories I wanted to share with you, but our time's gone by. But I will leave this with your thoughts. If you minister and somebody just needs a cup of cold water, give them a cup of cold water, because in that, you've given them the grace of God.